Okay, welcome everyone to Concurrent 5B. Today we've got Julia and Alice here to speak to us about the need to smile a bit more and perceptions of actuaries from other professionals in non-traditional areas. So Julia is currently the Director of Guardian Actuarial, an actuarial consulting firm that provides specialist analysis to support and inform planning and delivery of human services. Julia is a qualified actuary with more than a decade of consulting experience. After starting her actuarial career consulting to life insurance and wealth management clients, she has extended her actuarial consulting skills to focus on human and social services clients, such as state government agencies responsible for helping our community's most vulnerable people. She is skilled in managing large projects with multiple stakeholders and tight deadlines. Her passion for human services stems from her desire to support and contribute to her local community. Julia's long history of voluntary work ranges from being a lifeline telephone crisis supporter to promoting the actuarial profession to high school students. Julia is a fellow of the Institute of Actuaries Australia and holds a Bachelor of Commerce from Macquarie University. And Alice. So Alice Trong has over 10 years of life insurance experience within the corporate financial services environment. More recently, she has extended her experience to the human services sector. She's passionate about using her actuarial skills in making a difference by providing actionable insights to drive strategic outcomes. Alice enjoys playing basketball and volunteering. These give her the opportunity to build relationships, unite different individuals, and drive growth and development of herself and others. Alice is a fellow of the Institute of Actuaries of Australia, chartered enterprise risk actuary as well, and holds a Bachelor of Commerce from the University of New South Wales. And I will hand over.
Thank you, Janani. Hi everyone. Thanks for coming to our session today on They Need to Smile More. In this session we're going to encourage you to think differently about what actuaries can do. You're going to hear from Alice, who's made the transition from a traditional life insurance career into one in human services and how she did that. And we're also going to share with you the findings from our recent client survey where we asked non-actuaries about their perceptions and experiences of working with actuaries. But to get us started, let's play a game.
Awesome, let's have some fun. I'm sorry, it's called the value game. Sorry, it does involve some numbers, but I can assure you it doesn't involve any sophisticated modelling. Can I just have a show of hands? Who think there's value at being at the summit? All 100%, excellent. Woo. Thank goodness. And that's why we're here, right? So I'm now going to try and ask you to put a dollar figure or a price onto that value. But don't worry, I'm going to give a bit of guidance on how we're going to do that. So you might need pen and paper, or you can use your phone, or if you can just remember everything, that's great. First thing is just to list five things that are important to you and you use and value. So things could be your computer, your phone, your car, a holiday to the Maldives, or a cup of coffee in the morning to get you up. Give you, a couple seconds to think about that. Then I'd like you to prioritise that from 1 to 5. So 1 being the thing that you value the most, to 5 not really. And now have a think about the summit and the value of the summit. How would you slot, where would you slot that into those 5 priorities? Once you've done that, I want to put dollar values on the things that you originally listed and prioritised, the 5 things that you listed and prioritised, except for the summit. And remove any outliers, so things that don't look quite right. And so the value of the summit, then you'll find a range. Now I'm going to get really techy and ask you to pull out your apps, and there's a poll. If you wouldn't mind just tapping in where, what value you derived, and hopefully in real time we'll see. Where we all landed.
Just click on the link.
Yep, so the poll didn't work for me, but for Julia. So whilst that's populating, is there anyone who would like to share their value and how they found the process of how it was derived?
Could you step up to the mic, please?
Yeah.
Phil Stott. Well, I have to pay my own way to come here because I run my own company and I gladly come here. So obviously it's worth more than the $2,000 I paid to get here, but I wouldn't say it's worth a lot more, so I said somewhere in the $2,000 to $5,000 range.
Thank you very much. And as you can see from the results, you know, there is a wide range of acceptable values, and I'm glad no one said less than $100. So I'm glad the Institute would like to see that as well. And that is really the challenge that we're trying to highlight here, is that when we work in the human services sector, often the outcomes that we're looking at are intangible, so well-being outcomes, and then the challenge is how are we going to put a value on that. But as actuaries, I think we do and can provide a lot of thought leadership by thinking differently.
Thanks, Alice. What a fun game to play. Okay. So in today's session, we're going to talk about two main topics. Firstly, we'll show you how actuarial skills can be transferred into a new industry, and specifically into human services. Secondly, we're going to talk to you about some challenges and opportunities that we see for actuaries working in human services, including the results from our recent client survey. Alice.
So actuarial skills, I think, are transferable. I'm just going to share a couple pages out of my story, how I was able to transfer those actuarial skills into a totally different industry. So the first 12 years of my career, I was in life insurance, from pricing, valuation, capital, and, you know, knew what I was doing, and I was really safe in my comfort zone. But I really wanted to, you know, do something different, something where I could contribute to a good cause and I could give back to society. And I was really, really lucky to have been, you know, given the opportunity to do that with Julia at Guardian Actuarial. Now, I was really excited, but at the same time, I also felt fear. I think the fear of breaking out of my comfort zone, the fear of uncertainty, the fear of not knowing if I could add value in a space where I had absolutely no experience in. And, you know, you start questioning yourself, and particularly, what if I impact Guardian Actuarial brand, the actuary brand, or even my personal brand? But anyway, with that at the back of my mind, I did it anyway. And I realised that I actually had nothing to be scared about, because all those years of working at actuary has given me that skill set that I could apply in a different context. And you might look at those and, yeah, that's pretty simple and, you know, pretty straightforward, but that's exactly right. It's because it's so ingrained in our DNA that, you know, we often forget how valuable it is and how applicable it is in different contexts. So I knew nothing about human services, so I needed to upskill. I needed to bridge that knowledge gap and go on courses, understand the environment, the obstacles, the challenges. Then when I was given a project, I would think about the project, what am I actually trying to do here? What's the problem? And how, step by step, how do I get to solving the problem? And it's fair to say that we're pretty strong in our analytical skills and our modelling skills. And once you've upskilled, once you've, you know what the problem is, we can actually apply all those skills and add value. And finally, let's face it, we don't know everything. So we do need to draw on the expertise of other professionals and really work collaboratively to work towards that common objective or that goal. And I think, you know, Julia and Juliet mentioned before, it's multidisciplinary teams and diversity. I'm going to pass it back to Julia, who's going to give a real-life example on how we applied those skills.
So I touched on this example yesterday in my plenary speech, and this diagram is a slightly more complex version of the diagram I showed, but a very, very much more simplistic view of the actual example. So, and this was a project that we were involved in. So there was a state government agency. They needed to be able to look at their current number of children in out-of-home care, which is, you know, foster care, residential care, and say, all right, well, how many do we think we're going to have in 5, 10, 15 years' time? How many children do you think we'll still have in care? So with an actuarial eye, you can look at that sort of multi-state type model and think, all right, well, we are going to need to look at the time that they're going to spend in each of those states. There's a bunch of different future perspectives that you could see for each of those children. They might turn 18 and exit the system. They might be restored home safely to mum and dad. They might move back and forth between different types of care or between homes. So we as actuaries can handle this kind of complexity because we can look at transitional probabilities between states, we can look at waiting times within states, we can exit at age 18 and apply the skills that we are used to using in an insurance context. So the skills and capacity to undertake this kind of modelling weren't available in-house for this state government department, and in fact they had already outsourced the work to another consultant, a non-actuary. And so when the work came back and they were still having trouble kind of deciphering it, they approached us to see whether or not, and their oversight agency as well, so that we could validate that model and really understand how it was fitting together and what it was doing and whether or not that model could be used to estimate those future numbers and therefore future budget requirements. So in financial services and insurance, where we've all grown up as actuaries, you know, they're heavily regulated industries. We're very familiar in our Part 3 exams about what the professional standards are. Strange, thank you. And, you know, what are the regulations? What's the environment that we're working within? But when you move into human services, it's not yet a traditional actuarial area, yet we're still applying the same sorts of techniques. So there are no professional standards. And sometimes people ask me, what are the professional actuarial standards in human services? And the answer is there are none yet, maybe ever. But, of course, we're all bound by the code of conduct. So as actuaries, we all have to adhere to that, whether we're working in traditional spaces or non-traditional spaces. And that means we need to act with honesty and integrity and due care, take due care in a manner that will uphold the reputation of ourselves and our profession. We need to undergo appropriate ongoing continuing professional development so that we're relevant and skilled to be able to undertake the work that we're doing. Most of the work that we're working in, most of the areas that we're working in are very new, not just to the actuarial profession, but to society as a whole. So social impact investment, for example, where there's a mix of private and public investment and risk sharing across the public and private sectors, the measurement that goes with that, measuring things like independence or wellbeing, to Alice's game, you know, there's a wide range of acceptable values that we might come up with. And that technique that we played in that game is a technique that's used in the human services sector, and I'm sure you can all drive trucks through the technique and in terms of its robustness. So back to you.
Yeah, as Julia pointed out, there aren't, you know, rules, but that actually gives us a perfect opportunity to share our thinking, our techniques, our thought leadership, and try and influence our clients to think differently and act change. So through this simple example, we can show you how we've actually contributed to the rigour of a process. So we found a modelling error in one of our clients' models, and it had huge implications on the resource allocation across New South Wales. And, you know, the original erroneous results had already been communicated to across New South Wales. So we fixed the error. We then applied, you know, introduced a few new concepts to them. Like, we used analysis of profit principles to actually articulate the change and really tell them what the underlying drivers of that change were. We implemented a tech and peer review to make sure that the calculations were correct and that the results were reasonable. And finally, we provided some modelling techniques to them, how to simplify their spreadsheets, some spreadsheet standards, how to embed checks. So, you know, that might look really simple to us. We do that every day. But to them, they saw actual value in that, and then they were willing to actually implement and using this go forward.
Yep. So as promised, we're going to share with you the results of our recent client survey. Some people have asked me who Guardian Actuarial is and why they don't know about them, and that's because we're a startup. We've been in place for about 2 years. And so the disclaimer at the start of this is that we have a very small sample. We've got 20 clients who have answered this survey. But I think that's probably okay, because these numbers are not going to be used to, you know, underpin budget estimates or anything sensible or serious. It's to give you an insight and some ideas about what it is that our clients think of actuaries and of us. So the first thing we asked them was, have you ever met an actuary before you've worked with our team, and what do you think an actuary does? And as you can see, nearly two-thirds of them had never met an actuary before working with our team. The word cloud, is that the right term? On the right shows you some of the words they've used to describe what they think actuaries do. And most of those are probably not surprising. I was a bit offended by the dorky, but... they all said that we met their expectations and they all agreed that they would be prepared to work with actuaries in the future. Phew. But don't just take my word for it. We've got a short audio file here to hear from the mouths of some of our clients what they think an actuary does.
I previously understood that the key work of actuaries was limited to the management of risk in the insurance industry by looking at the likelihood and subsequent costs of particular insured events occurring across the population.
From my perspective, an actuary is a very highly skilled job, using statistics, probability and other mathematical tools to look for likelihoods or outcomes.
Part of the skill of an actuary is to take that very complex data set and turn it into plain English so that it's understandable to decision makers, understandable to agency staff, and these are aspects that the work of actuaries can be adapted to.
We also asked them what they thought were areas that actuaries could add value, and you can see some common culprits up there. It's, you know, analysis and interpretation of data and data science, but it's also really encouraging to see that they think that we can add value in their space, in non-traditional areas like child protection, climate change and education. We also then asked them how they think we can contribute to the rigorous measurement of social outcomes, you know, the game that we played at the beginning, and most of them actually think we do, and some of the comments, like, we do have rigorous processes and it's obvious that we can add value in this space.
Sorry.
Well, I think social policy has come from a very qualitative perspective where, you know, people knew what to do with narrative, they knew what to do with anecdotal or, you know, qualitative research that was rigorous in a qualitative research way. But it's relatively recently, in my experience, that we've started to look to... partner with different disciplines to bring a more of a quantitative view of what we might want to be looking at in the way of options.
In addressing the major decisions that need to be made by government and also in monitoring of government and indeed any human services agency in monitoring their performance, it's important to be able to demonstrate the relationship between cost, other resources, government and also not-for-profit organisations need to be able to put a compelling case and need to be able to demonstrate through both qualitative information but also very importantly through quantitative information what they do and their ability to continue to do.
Actuaries can be much more broadly focused than I guess I thought they were. Mm-hmm. I've been working in social investment and innovation space, and I think a lot of the issues that we have is around how do you measure some of these social outcomes and how can you actually work toward what's going to actually work.
We have been looking at how to build more equity into caseloads for frontline child protection workers. And I think that we had probably explored all of the methodologies that we had at our disposal, but then when you came in with actuarial lens on the problem, and you built some algorithms that helped us to predict, you know, what we needed to, or see what the outcome was of decisions that we were making today into the future, and gave us a way of being able to apply that methodology in a way that was repeatable, that was invaluable.
Okay. We also asked them how our communication skills were. Very relieved that no one thought we had poor communication skills. I think actuaries sometimes do get a bad rap around this, about how we communicate and whether or not we can actually communicate those complex problems or the findings from our complex modelling in a simple way. We then asked an open question around what are our strengths and weaknesses as an actuarial profession, I'll qualify. And given that, you know, a lot of actually these people hadn't met actuaries before they met with us, it was still interesting that they've come up with quite a good list of strengths, whether that's from our reputation or their experience from working with us or their, you know, uncle's friend's, you know, sister who's an actuary, whether it's just perception. But there were a few interesting things that stood out to us here just around how we explain complex matters. We could maybe do that better around being too detailed and narrow focused. So I think just opening up the way we think about the world and the way we communicate with other professionals is going to be very valuable for us to continue working in this space.
Cool. Can I just get everyone to give me a smile, please? Oh, awesome. You guys look great. You should smile a bit more. So we asked them if we had any personality traits, and two-thirds said we do, but we do need to smile a bit more. So when you do, you know, meet your internal or external clients, please smile a bit more because you guys look great. And some of the words that they use to describe us, and again, nerdy doesn't fit into there, which is great, so we're not the stereotyped kind of things came out. We also then asked if there's a place for actuaries on their team. And, you know, whilst it's only 22% of survey participants said they, you know, that yes, there are other things to consider, like the size of the team, the nature of the work. And whilst we won't be seeing, you know, a lot of actuarial ads in kind of the human services space, there's definitely a place for us as an independent reviewer or to supplement, you know, the skills within their team. And finally, just some tips on actuaries wanting to work in human services.
Oh, the word actuary really didn't mean anything to me.
The weaknesses, I'd say, is about keeping that information simple, and particularly where you're trying to provide that information to other fields of expertise.
I think case studies are really powerful. And being able to demonstrate what you have been able to do in an example that people can relate to.
Sector isn't particularly looking for or listening for the word actuary, but it's looking for and listening for the words around data, accessing existing databases, identifying additional data sources, and undertaking sophisticated multifactorial analysis of data which is available and obtained.
So, in conclusion, actuarial skills are transferable, and you've heard how one life insurance actuary has done just that. We've also talked about how we need to think differently about how what actuaries can do in order for us to work in human services, which is a less regulated environment than the ones that we've grown up in as actuaries, and how we can apply our training to new and different problems, but also being mindful of how non-actuaries perceive us as we do this work. Thank you for listening. Are there any questions?
Can I please also ask you to use the mic at the back if you have any questions?
Hi, I'm Jess. I'm from BT. I have a two-fold question. One is, how easy was it to source work in a non-actuarial area? And the second one is, what assistance would you ideally like to help you better source work?
Great question. Especially the second one.
So I have talked a little bit about this before. You know, how do you work? How do you move out of a traditional space into a non-traditional space? And how do you persuade non-actuaries to pay you to do something when they don't really know what actuaries can do? And the approach I've always taken with this is, I'm very passionate about this space, and you can probably see that passion comes through when I talk about it. And I really like people, and I really like talking to people about things that I like. So when I'm talking to clients, it's not about saying, hi, I'm an actuary, please pay me to come and do something useful for you. It's about saying, tell me a bit about what's going on for you. Tell me a bit about what your needs are. And usually through that discussion, they will start to sort of use you as a bit of a sounding board and talk to you about what's going on and what some of the gaps are. A lot of state government agencies and NGOs who are funded by state government agencies often need independent teams. So they might have the expertise in-house to do some of the work. They might not, but even if they do, they often need someone who does not work within their organisation to come in and provide a fresh perspective. So as actuaries, we're very good at doing that. We're very good at looking at the system as a whole, looking at the context, contextualising the problem and helping to solve that problem. So it's really what we do. It's just that we need to be able to firstly hear what the problem is and then secondly help articulate a roadmap towards that solution, but without necessarily just saying, oh, I'm an actuary, so trust me and, you know, I can help you. So that's the first one. What assistance would I like in terms of sourcing more work? I guess more people who can do that. more people that can go out and have those conversations. And as a profession, we need to build our brand and change the way we talk about what we do. I still catch myself sometimes saying, when people say, oh, what do you do? I'm an actuary. Oh, you know, when you buy a car insurance policy and you blah, 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 blah. My husband says, why do you still say that? Like, you were never even a GI insurance actuary in the first place. So, but, you know, that's the example that's relatable. So I think just, yeah, thinking about how we talk about ourselves as actuaries, how we talk to others, and listening as well as talking. So I hope that's answered your question.
Richard Lyon from TAL. I really enjoyed that. That was fabulous. Thank you. You gave me a few insights that I need. Two things. first of all, we used to agonise about what was the definition of an actuary, and we seem to have moved away from that a bit, but you did remind me in something you said of something I used to say about the definition of an actuary, which was there was no definition of an actuary. There was no typical actuary, except that every actuary preened a little and was happy to be told that they were not a typical actuary. the other thing I found fascinating was the appearance of communication on both the strengths and the weaknesses list. And I think that's a really important thing for people to understand, because we always berate ourselves about our poor communication. But it's relative, and a lot of what we do, the dealing with complex ideas, I was a bit disappointed to see that one on the right-hand side. But the distillation of value and insight out of extreme complexity is something we do probably much better than we give ourselves credit for.
Thank you, Richard. So maybe the definition of an actuary is a wicked problem. Hard to define, hard to solve, hard to describe. We don't want to be a typical actuary. Yeah, good points. Thank you.
Hi, Basson Morris from Deloitte. I've just a comment about the whole branding of actuaries and people's perception of us. I remember when I first started university in actuarial studies at Macquarie, I remember in our first week, the lecturer put up a slide on the screen. When you tell people you're an actuary, this is the reactions you will get. And he had a list of reactions. And obviously the first one was, you must be good at maths. But I remember one of the points was, oh, you must be boring. And I just thought, I wonder if in telling students that on their first week at university, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy as such. And I often wonder, what would have happened if on that first week he put up a different point saying, people are going to think you're a party animal. People are going to think you're a joker. And I wonder if like the self-talk or the way we talk to each other about what an actuary is. I wonder how much of an influence that has on how people perceive us. I mean, just a thought. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree, because I'm not a very typical actuary, as you can see. But yeah, definitely, I think, you know, how we frame ourselves. And when we get to know each other, or people get to know each other, you know, they won't find us boring or nerdy, because they didn't actually come up in the survey. So definitely, I do agree that we should actually frame ourselves as, yeah, we are party animals. And I'm sure most of you guys had a great time at the gala that you're not going to tell us about, but, you know, but definitely, yes.
Yeah, hi, John from SKL. Basim's hit on one of the things I was going to say, is it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, where if you're told you don't communicate well, where's the incentive to communicate better when, you know, you see people, you know, within an insurance context, you know, a lot of people have a technical expertise and aren't actuaries, and when they deal with actuaries and some of them go, well, I don't understand what they're saying. So when you go into the non-traditional field as you have, and congratulations, a fantastic example of just simply having a passion and being able to communicate the passion, which then helps the relationship and the communication flow increase back and forth. It shows the skill set so transferable. You know, just in the time I've been recruiting actuaries for clients in different parts of the world, the clients who've never had their own in-house actuarial resource, without fail, 100% of the time, always on a three-month follow-up to a placement, always say the equivalent of, I had no idea the extent, the value proposition some of these people, and some of these are insurance-related operations. But when you start recruiting for non-insurance-related operations like Domino's Pizza, for example, you actually find the appreciation of the innate transferable skill set that you're trained extremely well to do. When people have examples of it and work with it, you don't have to break a barrier. You just have to be prepared to take the step out of the comfort zone into an area where they're going to throw things at you about logistics, franchise, you know, marketing propositions and other things. But it's easy when you apply the skill set that you've got. Great, great presentation. Very good.
Thanks, John. So are you placing actuaries with Domino's?
Can I have an actuary with ham and tomato? Phil Stott, thanks. Can you put the slide back on about the strengths and weaknesses? I just want to make the observation as someone who's been around for a while. And it strikes me that the first five of those weaknesses are actually the same thing, expressed in different words. I've learned as I get older that actuaries need to be more bold in cutting through the crap of the detail, excuse my language, and actually get to the heart of the matter. And I think we're actually too timid because we're too tied down. Now, I mean, there obviously is a place for the detail. I'm currently working with a client on, you know, sorting out problems with their modelling software, and that gets incredibly detailed, and, you know, and there's a place for detail and things like that. But when you get into especially in new fields where they've never had actuarial involvement, we really need to be willing to go through and just really cut to the chase and not give all the detail. I mean, I'm toying with the idea of writing some articles on that first actuary that was a Roman centurion by the name of Spurius Accurus. But it really is a problem, I think. Just because we can calculate something to 10 decimal places doesn't mean that we need to or should do. We really need to learn, and that comes with maturity. I think I've learnt it more as I get older. I mean, these days I'm far more likely to go into a meeting with a client with no piece of paper in my hand and just tell them bluntly, this is your problem, this is what you've got to do to solve it. You know, there's got to be a report in the background which justifies all of that. But, you know, when you're actually speaking to them face-to-face, cut through the stuff.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes in human services there isn't a lot of detail. And so if we are waiting until we have the perfect data, which doesn't exist, you know, the perfect solution, the most elegant a way of handling something and coming up with a great answer,
actually, you know, everything's going to change. The government's probably going to change before we actually get to implement that solution. So it's about getting that sort of the right balance and practical balance.
Hi, Andrea Glass, PwC New Zealand. Thanks very much for your presentation. I hope the audience will be a little bit interested in what's happening in this space in New Zealand. So it is very clearly the next big growth area for actuaries. Already we have a team of about 10 people working in our Ministry of Social Development in this space, and that team is working really, really hard and already on call for other departments. So our Ministry of Justice is now using actuaries. Our Ministry of Education is now using actuaries. So in all three of those cases, they are using actuaries for their long-term view, their ability to forecast into the future and to help identify interventions that will make a real difference in the lifetime of New Zealand's most vulnerable people. It's really interesting talking to those people as well. So they are so passionate about what they're doing and about how they make such an incredible difference to the lives of those people every day that they go to work. We've thought quite a lot as a society about how we can support those people. It is different working in the government sector from working in the private sector. The communication skills cannot be underestimated. It is so important, particularly to be able to listen, but also to be able to think really carefully about what you say and the political sensitivities of what you're saying as well. As a society, we are looking at getting more access to training about the differences in the public sector available for our members, because it is an area that so many people are now interested in belonging to and contributing in. And as I say, for us, it's the next GI. It's the next area that has gone from nothing to something that is a really big deal for our members.
Thank you, President. Thanks for sharing. Now, it's so exciting to see what's happening in New Zealand, because I think really Australia is taking our cues from you guys and the work that's been done in the welfare space there. And I'd be really interested to hear more about the tools and things that you're putting together, the training materials, because I think there is a bit of a gap there. It'd be good to maybe work together on not reinventing the wheel to do that.
Hi, Alison Visser, Guardian Actuarial. This is my probably biggest question when I joined the team is how do you convince clients who have never heard of an actuary before that we are worth investing in compared to other mathematical, statistical professionals? So we are not the only group of people who can model, who can look at complex problems. You talked a little bit before about the code of conduct, and the actuarial brand, does that play a piece when you're pitching to clients?
Great question. Thank you, Ali. I do think that we are competing in this space, and as I said yesterday, we don't automatically have a seat at the table when we're tackling some of society's wicked problems. And part of that is because we are a small profession and we haven't really cracked into this space yet in as big a way as I think we will. I was talking to the executive director of the analysis and research team within New South Wales Family and Community Services, and she has a statistics team and a chief statistician of facts. She also has an economics team and a chief economist. And I keep saying to her, why don't you have a chief actuary? Why can't I be your chief actuary for New South Wales Family and Community Services? But in reality, what they do is they kind of blend all of the skill sets that we have. We blend all the skill sets that we have, all of those types of disciplines, but they have individual teams to do each of those things. And I think it's a very, very hard one to solve easily and to persuade and say, well, you know, just because actuaries are better, we can do everything, we're, you know, one-stop shop. I think it's about getting in and building relationships and demonstrating what we can do, because once we get in there, as John pointed out, people can see what we can do and how we can do it more effectively and efficiently, and consider that big picture. It's the problem solving as well as the actual techniques that we use to do that.
Hello, Hayden Burno from Causeway. Julia, you mentioned with some of the early stage methods of social impact measurement, it's easy to drive a truck through them. Wondering if you could give an example of a good example of social impact measurement that an actuary's skills would be able to produce.
Thanks, Hayden. Nice to see you in person. Lots of Skype calls. So, rigor around social measurement. Look, I think this is a point. This is a place that's still in its infancy, and there are frameworks. There's internationally recognised frameworks to measure social impact. So, there's results-based accountability as an approach. There's also social return on investment, or SROI, which is becoming increasingly well known. And in fact, Alice and I are trained in SROI approaches. The limitation, and I'll hand over to you as well to add to this too, because I know you had some good points when we did the training. It's a framework. So they're really just frameworks and sort of processes as to how you would measure it. So the game we played at the start is one technique that you would use that's a widely recognised, globally endorsed approach to measuring the intangible. So you might use that approach to measure independence or the value of being at summit or well-being. But as we saw, there's such wide ranges in what that value might actually be, and there's a lot of judgment required to work out what that is. So part of it's about talking to your stakeholders and understanding, well, you know, is the value for me being able to speak English something I take for granted? I probably put a low value on it because I don't really think about it. But someone who's a new migrant who can't speak English, and because they can't speak English, they can't get a job, they can't get Centrelink, they can't get housing, they would put a very high value on being able to speak English. So, you know, in the UK they have this green book where they put values against things. It's really difficult to kind of develop something like that because value is often relative. But I think there's a lot of opportunity to really get there, and I know you guys are doing some work around those sorts of things too, but I think collectively we need to put our heads together, not just as actuaries, but with our stakeholders, and really understand what the value is of those certain social outcomes that we're wanting to measure. And do that together and improve and test and learn over time.
Yeah, I pretty much second what Julia was saying. It's really highly subjective. So I value walking so much more now because I'm actually recovering from a fractured ankle, probably more than you guys. So it's just great to be able to walk. But as Julia was saying, there's a data approach in the UK, the Green Book approach, where Dr. Fujiwara, he was using data. He's like lots of years of surveying data and, you know, what's the incremental well-being of, you know, having a higher pay or being more healthy and being able to use data and correlations. So I think that's a starting point, but I think we could definitely add values on because we value stuff, you know, in policy liability and all that stuff, that we definitely can add value. But, yeah, I don't think there's an answer yet.
Matthew Wolf from SuperSA. I think you had a slide on HR protection issue earlier on that you worked on. I mean, I guess I was just wondering if you're able to expand on, I guess, of what you did differently in that problem compared to the non-actuarial problem. Oh, what they did.
Yeah. I think this was a good example of how do you get the right level of complexity, because clearly this model and the model I showed yesterday is far too simple to be able to come up with any sort of reliable estimate. There's too many moving parts. But the model that had been built was very, 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 very complex, and it had lots and lots and lots and lots of states in there. And so the trouble with that is that when you've got a small pool of children and then you're trying to estimate, you know, probability of moving between different state, so, you know, from foster care to being restored or whatever, you start to get sort of some spurious accuracy and some weird numbers going on. So I think the difference that we brought was some big picture thinking and just some rigour around the maths and how you might come up with those assumptions, how you'd set the assumptions, whether or not you've got a big enough data set underpinning the assumptions that are trying to be set, and whether or not the additional complexity was worth the risk that came with that complexity of that model. So ultimately we were trying to say, well, is this model fit for purpose? Can we use this model to rely on the results to support budget estimates? Is it the right level of complexity? Are the mechanics working? Have the assumptions been set sensibly? Are we using data where there's no children in certain movements from one category to another, and so we're getting a zero probability of transition, those sorts of things, just looking at it from a holistic perspective, but also bringing all of our unique sort of actuarial modelling skills to check that model and to be able to recommend areas for improvement so it could be used.
All right. So please join me in thanking Julia and Alice, as we have run out of time. Also got...